Gifted Talks Fundraising offers you a seat at the table for a relaxed chat about what it takes to build successful giving programs. Marshalling decades of practical hands-on experience, the Gifted Directors provide helpful advice and top tips for achieving your fundraising goals. G'day everybody, we're here for Gifted Talks Fundraising, and today we're going to be discussing probably one of my favourite topics, and that is about major donors. And it is very much an art as well as a science in recruiting and engaging major donors. So I'm really pleased to be joined today by Amy Stevens and Chris Goldie, collectively decades of experience in this area and across all different sectors, not just in the UK, but abroad more and more. So I'm actually looking forward to learning something myself here, guys. So thanks for joining me again back in Royal Leamington Spa. And let's get into it. What is a major donor, Amy?
Oh, well, it depends on the organisation, doesn't it? So as we always say, major donors will mean very different things to different people. For some organisations, a major gift is classed as, say, £1,000 or more. Others, it's £100,000 or more. It's really fitting to your organisation and making sure you set those boundaries right as you go on your fundraising journey.
Just add one thing on there. It's really interesting because I also think it's about the confidence of a development team if you understand what a true level of a major donor is. That, and the reason I say that is when we did the IDP benchmarking survey, we asked the question, you know, what do you consider to be a major donor? And those schools or development offices that raised the most money consistently very often had lower expectations of what a major donor meant than some of the schools who weren't doing it. And you sort of, it was fascinating because I think actually there must be some real sense of depression. Well, major gifts don't work. You know, major gifts over £50,000. Well, actually at your school, a major gift's probably £5,000.
Yeah.
And if you can get 10 of those, that's, you know, rather than, excuse my language, bust your balls trying to find 50,000 donors, why don't you try and concentrate on getting 25,000 or £10,000 donors?
Because, well, in 5 years' time, your major gift might be £10,000 then, right?
Absolutely.
It is about impact, though, isn't it? I mean, for a major donor to, it really needs to have, in some respects, impact on the organisation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at £1,000, you know, the local soup kitchen round here, for example, that is by far a major donor and will have a massive impact. But for a university, let's say, research department, it probably isn't really going to make the grade. So it's for you to sit back honestly as development professionals and understand, is this gift going to have a major impact? And if it is, that's your level of major donor, in my view. Mm. But do you not just go to the rich list, Amy, and decide, how do you find these major donors? You just go, oh, hang on, let's look through. There's Richard Branson yet again. You know,
Gosh, how often do we hear that?
We see.
I mean, I will say the one thing I do like the rich list, particularly the giving list for, is to see what patterns have happened in the past year and what people are giving to. I think that's interesting.
That's
and we've
interesting.
Seen a big shift in recent years, haven't we, in the kind of causes that are receiving the most support from the biggest givers in the country.
And geographically, actually, it's the other thing I find quite interesting about the rich list is you can look at one of the good exercises very often is to go online after the rich list has been published.
Yeah.
Go to regional newspapers and say, who are the 10 richest people in the West Midlands? Or who are, you know.
Yeah.
And that way you start to get a sense of who actually the real players are.
So
in your research, Chris, where else do you go to sort of try and determine who are the most likely prospects to be major donors?
Well, it's got to come from either the networks that you already have, so your community of stakeholders. So in a school's environment, that's almost certainly alumni and or parents, former or current.
Yeah.
In charitable organisations, it might well be your previous donors. What are the giving patterns? Are the people who have given consistently? Well, I worked on a big campaign for a theatre a number of years ago. We looked at the number of times people attended.
Okay.
And what sort of shows they attended. Because if they were coming to the opera, it was a big regional touring company, did they go to, you know, two farces and a panto, or did they come to two-time Shakespeare and two operas? Without sounding terribly snobbish about it, generally speaking, if they came to two Shakespeare's and two operas, they were probably of a different wealth profile.
So me turning up for the AC/DC tribute band is probably...
Well, you're Australian, so you're probably allowed to do that. But you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah,
that we're talking about...
So So you get these
wealth.
What I would describe, or we do describe, don't we, as suspects. You get this great hopper, if I could envision that, of all these names from the rich list, from that list, who's coming to what show, and you pour them all in the hopper, and there you are with a lot of suspects. Mm. How do you turn them into prospects, into people that we can actually ask, Amy? What do we have to do?
So first of all, we've got the prospect evaluation, haven't we?
Yeah.
So where do they sit in, you know, in the readiness to be asked? What cultivation is needed, etc. And some clients hate this, don't they? Because they see, you know, these spreadsheets with different how we score people, and others go, I love this. This makes absolute sense. I can see exactly where people are and what we do. And I love it because it really genuinely shows what potential you have to raise money from these prospects at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the four categories in prospect evaluation, don't we? So does somebody
we had a separate podcast on this, but please remind
we
us.
We do. Yeah. We do. Does someone have the capacity to give at whatever level you're setting at that major gift level?
So if I'm going out looking for a £100,000 gift,
Yeah. Do
we recognize, does our research indicate that they're likely to have that type of money?
And that doesn't mean that they are multimillionaires, because as we know, not all multimillionaires give lots and lots of money away. Or if they do, they might not give to what you're raising money
that's
for.
That's propensity.
So we'd score that against things like known salary levels, known wealth levels, you know, history of giving to other causes, etc. Do they have that capacity to be able to give?
Mm-hmm.
We then have the interest.
Yeah.
Have they shown any interest in the case for support?
Yeah, in that particular thing. Yeah.
And that's your case for support, as well as kind of, you know, have they given, let's say your hospital, have they given some of the hospital causes, for example?
Health,
Propensity, which you just mentioned, which Chris touched upon. So do they have a habit of giving to these kind of things?
I love the sheep and goats analogy there. Some people are givers and other people are not. It's got nothing to do with the amount of money they've got.
And then finally, the access. Do we have either a GDPR compliant route to contact them, or, you know, are they known to somebody, or do we not know this person at all, but we think this would be right up their street and we need to find an access route?
And that I think is really important, that prospect suspect evaluation. You mentioned the great Sir Richard Branson before. You know, honestly, if the three of us all had £10 every time somebody had mentioned his name, we wouldn't be sitting here doing a podcast right now. We'd be sunning ourselves. Amy would be deep sea diving, and I'd be playing golf.
We'd be sunning ourselves on his private island.
Yeah, absolutely.
I suggest we were doing the podcast from a beach.
From a beach somewhere with a rum punch in hand. Absolutely. But this is the point about evaluation, isn't it? Is there a connection?
Yeah.
Is there a connection that could be leveraged? Because a distant connection is no connection.
No, it's not. And it's a lot of investment to build that connection, is the other point to recognise. But just in summary then, having decided on what your major gift level is because of their impact on your case or your project or your organisation, £1,000, £100,000, whatever that number is, then using research tools, you develop a great list of suspects, a super long list. In fact, I even heard somebody go through their own database and say, right, any address that's got a house name in it, we're going to put them in the suspects list. So I thought that was an interesting approach. So someone in a two up, two down, but has got, you know, the manor.
The Grove.
But you've got that suspects list. Then use your prospect evaluation and rating tool that Amy took us through just then, helpfully, those four. And then you end up with a qualified pool, and it's relatively short pool normally, of major gift prospects that you can focus your time on. That's the real
absolutely your top prospect list, and that, you know, numerically that could be 20, it could be 30, it could be 40. But the other way, of course, part of that I did forming that prospect list, and this is the really important piece of why you do a feasibility study and why you build a campaign board, is who are those personal networks, who are those contacts, who does it, when you do a feasibility study interview.
That is really good. So in the study interview, very often ask, who do you know? Who do you think might be interested in giving? Because you're using the scale of giving at this level to achieve this result. Those prospect listing sessions are really important. In the old days, before computers even, when I was first fundraising, we used to have prospect listing sessions. We'd get people together, usually with a glass of wine, because alcohol always helps, in my view. And we would talk about the case and the scale of giving, and then focus in on those top 10 gifts. Who do you think might be able to make one of those? And people start to loosen up. It's a cone of silence. It was Chatham House rules. they could say who they liked, but there was never going to be anything leave the room that said that they'd dob somebody in. But it was such important because it's about knowing when people feel wealthy, if they're about to sell a business or they're about to inherit. They may be multimillionaires but feel really broke because all their assets are committed. Yeah. And you get that really good intel through those prospect listing sessions.
What I like to do as well, speaking about looking at the scale, is let's say we've got a scale and we need one gift at $500,000, two at $250,000, four at $100,000 as the top few gifts.
Yeah.
Is to then start to put names against those. Who are our targets for each of these?
Yeah.
And that's particularly helpful for a development professionals reporting back to leadership teams, to trustee boards, to say, hey, listen, we've got a plan, we're working on this, these are our prospects, we need to convert one of those four.
And it gets them thinking as well, doesn't it? Yeah, and it then gets your leadership thinking about their contacts and their connections. And actually, one of the, it's the same when you do your first tranche of trust and foundation research. Yeah. One of the things that you should always do is share with your leadership who are all the trustees, who are the advisors, who are the connections, because you never know. And I had a really good one a couple of years ago where a guy came back to me and said, oh, my son used to work for this chap.
Yeah.
I'll email my son and see if I can get you a, you know, and that led ultimately to me having a phone call with the director of the grant maker, explained what we were trying to raise money for. He had a couple of questions. We got through those questions and we ended up getting £75,000 in the end, you know, and it all came through that sharing a list of 30 different trusts, and the guy had gone through it. He said, well, I know this person. Okay. You know, and that's how we got there.
So, it's a really important step, if you like, in the focusing of your campaign to go through this sieving process. But if you're focusing then, I mean, the top 10 gifts on your scale of giving generally bring in 40 to 60% of your target, don't they? So if you're, as Amy, as you're suggesting, if you're through your prospect evaluation and so on, identifying three, let's say, at each of there, there's 30 names then that you're really focusing on, and you only need a third of them to come through at the level you expect to get there. And they won't. There'll be some that'll come above and some that'll come below, but it's a really targeted, personal, bespoke, if you like, process then for planning their cultivation and asking. And it really focuses your team, doesn't it?
It does. And I think doing that evaluation exercise and looking at the scoring and where a prospect might be weak, so let's say it's access.
Yeah.
It helps you understand where should we invest our time, who should be our first prospects.
Yeah.
So, for example, we worked with a hospital that had a phenomenal female leader at the helm of the campaign board. And, you know, there'd be prospects whose capacity and whose interest was so high, we didn't have any access, but we were like, right, well, we're going to find a way because this is worth pursuing this and investing time in, because we're pretty sure they're going to be interested in it.
Yeah.
And it can help you then weigh up, you know, where do we invest time? Or do we think they're not really that interested and we haven't got access, so let's park those for now. You know,
And that's why we say, don't we, so often, that major gift fundraising is the most efficient form of fundraising out there. Because you are just concentrating on a relatively small number of people and you're dedicating your time and your energy and your focus in that particular case of just how do we find a way in?
Yeah,
and if that takes you 3 days to work out how you find a way in, but 6 months down the line it gets a gift of £500,000, that's three days well spent. And the same 3 days organising an event that raises you £10,000, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. But to your point earlier too, it is with a grant funder, you're then speaking to the decision makers and you're getting on the agenda. But equally, sometimes it's about understanding the order of prospects to be asked.
Yeah.
Because as you said earlier, with grant funders, sometimes they're very influenced by which other grant funders are in. So let's go here first because we've got the best contact and connection with trustees, get some success there, and then that will help us open the door to these further major gift prospects.
Yeah.
So it's also now about not just, you know, the focus, which you're rightly identifying there, Chris, but it's then planning the sequence of asks to follow. So you improve, success brings success, remember, you improve your prospects of further success.
And I think there's all sorts of other things, aren't there, within major giving. It's understanding that not everybody's going to be up for an ask at meeting one. It might take you half a dozen meetings.
Almost certainly. Yeah.
No, but in some cases it might only take two. Yeah. It does depend very much on the nature of the relationship that you might have. The other bit, from a confidence perspective, particularly if you're volunteers, is start on the low-hanging fruit. Yeah. Who are the ones where it's going to be easiest to do it? And then the final piece, of course, in major giving, which is why volunteer giving is so important, is asking somebody to join you in doing their support is a far easier and more powerful way of getting a major gift than going, will you give? Because if you declare your own gift...
It's a different matter.
It's a complete. So. You say, look, I've decided to support this, and you know, in the end, I decided I was going to commit $50,000 over 4 years. Well, that's set the benchmark. Very hard for the person you know well to then turn around and go, oh well, I'm not interested at all.
No, I think that's a really good point, and so it's incredibly unusual anyway. If you see someone face to face personally, that you won't come away with at least something. The challenge then, Amy, is managing this. I mean, if you've got 30, 40 major gift prospects with possibly multiple lines of connection from across different parts of your organization and your supporter base, orchestrating the ask, making sure you get the right person, or usually more than one person, in front of them, eyeballing them, talking them through the opportunity of giving, is really, really a big part of good campaign management. So how do you do that? How do you like get the mechanics to work?
It's got to have some form of central control, hasn't it? A campaign office, a development office, somebody taking charge of that prospect allocation. Who are these names and who's speaking to who? And we do that, obviously, like we say, through this, the first step of the evaluation, looking at who knows these people, and then creating a prospect profile. So what we're going to ask them for, is there a naming recognition attached to that? What do we think their motivations are going to be? And therefore, who's the best person to make the ask? And so they get allocated for that follow-up. Sometimes, like you say, we do a pincer approach, don't we? We'll have people going in from different sides. But just critical to make sure we're not double dipping. How embarrassing to either ask somebody who said no or ask somebody who's already given, even worse.
That's even worse. I was going to say, it's almost worse.
Definitely.
When somebody's been generous and you go, somebody else goes and asks them for money.
So central control of those prospects. Nobody going off being a, you know, a maverick and just asking haphazard. And that brings us kind of round to one of our earlier podcasts, which is about kind of recruiting people and people understanding their roles and responsibilities and what they need to do when asking, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think it's major giving is fabulous if you get it right. And it's a form of fundraising that we know can be hugely effective. The statistics would bear out that those organisations that raise the most money, generally speaking, have fabulous major gift programmes in place. Some of them may be patron-type schemes with different tiers. Some may be much more individually focused. But you've got huge flexibility in the offering that you can make, the way you can present a case. It can be something specific. It can fund a project. It can fund a bursary. You know, it is a way of being able to, you know, make the donor feel like they've got control and ownership over their financial support. And that way they are doubly motivated to sign up. And even if they make a pledge over 5 years, they're not going to dip out of that pledge because they feel invested in it. They own it.
It's interesting, the dance, if you like, that you have to go through. Once you've built the relationship with the prospect, and your point, Amy, about how you then, who opens the batting, literally goes in and breaks, starts the process of solicitation, and then the side influences, you plan, someone knows they're going to meet them at a board meeting at such and such a time, and they happen to mention they're supporting the campaign and how brilliant it all is, in all innocence, in inverted commas, influencing the donor. And then that whole, people don't appreciate the amount of work that goes into doing that properly. And then, of course, once they have given, managing the relationship beyond that. Because funnily enough, people tend to solicit gifts, volunteers tend to solicit gifts at the same level of their own giving. To your point about join me. So if you, the bigger prize very often, if you get a major donor, then they very often will solicit other major gifts for you successfully. I had a case in point at a university in the Northeast. Were a really powerful local businessman. I mean, he owned the local football club, et cetera, et cetera. But he was known as being the moths flew out of his wallet when he opened it. You know, he was a really tough guy to get money out of. He chaired the University Development Trust and had never given. Finally got him to give a seven-figure gift. Well, we got four, he asked four other people and was successful. Everyone So the university went from raising £3,000 in philanthropic money in the year before to over $4 million the following year off five gifts. And
I'm very aware of one school that had a £100 million campaign, and they recruited a very good person to be chairman who was willing to give a seven-figure gift. And he his contribution was to go to nine other alumni of this institution.
Yeah.
And get them all to give £1 million. And before they had asked anybody else, they already had £10 million in commitments.
So it was super important they're allocated. So nobody else is messing up this process. Yeah. You know, it's a very important choreographed sort of process of that solicitation across.
And the point I make, just thinking about it, so we don't put off all the schools that think £1 million gifts we never get. It works equally well to £5,000 gifts or £10,000 gifts. It's about setting the benchmark that is comfortable and having somebody that's prepared to go and say, I'm going to do that.
And ask us, get gifts at about the same level.
That's the same level.
Big thing to remember. Amy, sorry.
It's the reciprocal giving as well, though, isn't it? So, like you say, your prospect list may start in one situation, but prospect A then gives you 100,000 and then says, I'm going to get X, Y, and Z to join me. And you didn't even know those people who were going to come on board. Mm. And I had that with an animal charity that we worked with recently, who six-figure donor, he was hilarious. He was also very Yorkshire, so he liked me. And every time I rang, he'd just say, how much do you want now?
Just like that, straight out.
Come on, what do you want now? Tell me what I'm paying for.
Yeah.
And half the time I was just ringing to give him an update. But he also...
But you took the opportunity.
I did, yeah. He opened his networks and said, why haven't we asked so-and-so? I'll ask him when I next see him.
Brilliant. And so coming back to your major gift prospects and how you develop your list, that's why that personal knowledge is so important. Mm. Because the more people think about it, the more names they'll come up with. Mm. That's particularly if they've already given, because they've invested and now they're thinking, well, he should bloody well be doing it. She should be doing it. They should be, you know, they've got lots of money. They should be doing it.
It's not just about obligation, which I understand, but it can also be about opportunity, about, they're eminent, successful people in this community at this time. And like me, they would want to be involved and we should ask them.
But the most important bit of that is once you've got somebody making those recommendations, they're also the people that will go and open that door for you.
Because the ownership, isn't it interesting?
The
ownership for the campaign success is now moving away from the sort of campaign manager, trustee, home team to these major donors.
So Amy's wealthy Yorkshireman didn't just throw a bunch of names at Amy and say, right, go and speak to them.
No, he didn't.
He went, I'll get in touch with them and I'll get back to you when I've spoken
to them. He's a proper Yorkshireman.
But that's, you know, to be fair, I'm going to defend Southerners now. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that works equally. You know, when Amy raised a lot of money one year for a statue from three different very wealthy families, it was literally one saying, I'll put you in touch with them and I'll put you in touch with them, and boom.
I think that was one of the fastest campaigns we've ever run.
It was an afternoon.
Campaign,
All sorted.
Yeah, all done. All done.
Many millions raised. It was one to talk about.
But again, it was a classic example, and that just shows relative scales of major giving. Mm. That just happened to be at uber, ultra high net worth level.
Yeah.
But they all knew each other, and once family number one had given, family number two and family number three almost had to give.
So in your development plan, campaign plan, if you there's got to be a piece there, surely, on focus on major gifts. As you said earlier, whatever level, £1,000, £100,000, whatever, because without that focus, applying the old 80-20 rule, you'll never really raise the sort of sums of money you could. But what are the KPIs? What sort of measures? I'm thinking about the bursars out there and the finance directors. What would they need to be looking for performance in major gifts, rather than just saying, oh, yes, I'm having a lot of these really nice lunches with these rich people? Mm. What are the things you would, that if you were them, you would want to be seeing? What are the KPIs?
Well, I think that's why the evaluation is important, because then we can say we've got 10 prospects who are scoring 80 out of 100, which means they're ready to be asked.
Right.
So we're focusing on those over the next 6 months.
And another 10 that need to be cultivated.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So they're going to come to an event, and then you can look at potential, obviously, target amounts and conversion rates and set some rough kind of KPIs on what you might turn over from
that. So do you, Chris, put a range of, you know, if your rating is, we did talk about evaluation, but rating is saying, I reckon they're capable of giving somewhere between this and that. Mm. Do you do that?
Yes and no. I think you can do it with the people that you speak to, particularly during a feasibility study. You know, we're all three of us, and it's changed a bit since COVID, and now more and more video call interviews. But the old pen and scale of giving test was a fantastic guide for being able to say, well, you know, if I gave you that much, how much tax am I saving? Well, that gives you a pretty clear steer as to what they're going to do. Yeah. And then if you work on that theory, the same person has said that, well, they could probably introduce you to three or four more people and they're all going to give it the same level. It's not rocket science. Let's say that it was a 25 grand. Well, that's five people who we think are going to be giving around 25 grand. So there's 125,000 plus gift aid.
Yeah.
So let's say, but they won't all be gift aid. So let's say there's 150 from five donors.
Yeah.
And if you've got five times of those, suddenly you've got 750,000 or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Spot on.
And that's the way that you can start to put, but then the KPI for the bursar is we're going to have it's where the private phase of a capital campaign comes in. You know, we're going to run a private phase from March to November.
Mm.
And by the end of November, we hope to have raised X in commitments and pledges and gifts.
Mm. Mm.
But more importantly, we will have spoken to, we've got a top prospect list, we will have spoken to, or would have spoken to and got a decision one way or the other out of 30 of our top 40.
So there's clearance of asking, there's financial measures as a KPI, numbers of meetings is another good KPI. I actually like, maybe it's just my neuroses, winning the campaign on paper was always a big thing for me.
Yeah.
So you can measure obviously what's in the bank. You've got your cash. You could got documented pledges. So that's another component that adds up, but that's future cash. But then I would use the prospect evaluation and rating process. So I'm estimating of the 30 asks that are in play, this ask might bring in 10. This one I think is going to be between 15 and 35. This one, and I would add a lot. And that to me was the prospect pipeline. And when I could get that pipeline up to the target level, it kind of changed the whole dynamic of the campaign for me.
Yeah.
So you would some you'd win, some you wouldn't win, some you'd get more than you thought, some you would get less.
Yeah.
But the point was you were building confidence for the finance director because they could definitely see where the work was going.
And that's where, you know, the scale of giving, for example, around major giving is really important. It's almost like you've got two scales, haven't you? If the accepted major gift for a client is 25k and you want 12 of those, and then you're gonna have 8 at 50 and 2 at 100 and 1 at quarter of a million, that gives you a good chunk of money. It's less than 20, it's 23 gifts or whatever it might be.
That's it.
And that's what you say to the bursar is, by the end of this phase we will have spoken to 23 people. Now, as you say, you know, you might have gone for 25 grand, but actually six of them have given you 35 grand.
Yeah.
So that readjusts your numbers. But the fact is you are in that position where you've got something to judge it by.
Yeah.
And the same with the broader case scale of giving is that, you know, you can sit down at the end of the private phase and say, right, we're really strong at the top or we're very strong at the bottom, but we've got a gap here in the middle. So who are winning our campaign on paper? Where are we going to find these 10 middle gifts from? And then your prospect evaluation, the capacity is all focused around, okay, we don't need the uber ultra high net worth here.
Yeah, who are the 25?
Who are the people that we know can afford to give us that level of money?
But then we don't always know them, do we?
No.
So, you know, it's much easier at someone like a theatre or a school where you've got that constituent group of people. But for others, you need to explore connections, and we call it network mapping, don't we?
Yeah,
so
we do.
Thinking about who might know who. So we have a client at the moment working internationally. We know that probably 90% of their funding is going to come from major international grant funders. And, you know, we know the team and their background and kind of what they're involved in. And they said, we don't know anyone. We don't know anyone at Funder X. So one of our team, Connor, went out and you know, looked at, let's say, Funder One, looked at all the trustees on there, looked at who they're linked to. And then we soon realised, okay, you don't know him, but you know him really well at such and such university, and he sits on a board with him. So ask her a favour from your mate there to introduce you. And we've now found all these connections and ways into funders, you know, with potential for eight-figure gifts.
Fantastic.
But they didn't realise they knew until we did that mapping.
So not so long ago, and this is nothing to do with fundraising, although it follows those principles. My cricket club, of which I'm chairman, our sponsor turned around after 4 years and said, we're not doing it again. So I was scratching my head thinking about it. And somebody came up with a suggestion of a name, and I Googled, I was aware of them, and I researched it. Let's finish the name Amy and I discussed a while back. And I realised that this particular gentleman, when I Googled him, he had been a trustee of a charity, and I knew that a friend of mine had been a trustee of that charity. So I emailed the friend of mine and said, do you know Mr. So-and-so? And he went, yeah, I know him really well. I said, well, could you introduce me? And the first thing he said, well, here's his email address. And I said, no, I think you better introduce me just to make sure he's happy to speak to him. Within 4 days, I'd got this. We exchanged WhatsApp numbers. He said, yeah. He said, WhatsApp me, let me know what you're after. I did that. He passed me on to somebody else. Guy rang me up. Within 48 hours, we had a replacement sponsor in place.
Fabulous.
And that's just applying. And when I spoke to the guy, he said, well, you've done the right thing. You've gone to the top. I said, well, I'm a fundraising consultant.
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of the day, I just applied the principles that I give all my clients.
Exactly.
And I've used it for my own personal gain. But it was a really good example of just knowing, thinking laterally, okay, I don't know this guy, but I know this guy.
Mm.
And he knows him. Mm. So I'm
How do we make that link? Yeah.
No, it's so important. I think it's the most exciting part of fundraising is Major Gifts fundraising and the art that it constantly evolves as it does in any chemistry, human chemistry situation. But the outcomes are hugely impactful. I know it's an area you both are well practiced in. So thank you for coming along today and sharing your wisdom. Any final thoughts from you, Amy, you'd like to share before we sign off?
I would say sometimes it's really hard and, you know, it takes you months and months and multiple meetings and failed connections. And other times it's really easy and you meet someone for the first time and ask them and they say yes. If you do that prep, you know, you're putting yourself in a good space to move forward and get the best result possible. But that preparation is key.
It is.
I think, you know, we've recently done some webinars around asking.
Yeah.
And actually, and we've all run workshops for volunteer leadership and stuff. And I think what you really get out of those and you see is that realisation that asking people for money, particularly potential major donors for money, is not as gut-wrenchingly awful as you think it's going to be.
No, no.
If you do it properly.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, you know, being able to use the experience of people like us to just guide you through that process. Mm. So you're reassured. And at the end of it, you can do the prospect. You know, I did a workshop recently where we did the prospect evaluation and allocation after the workshop.
Yeah.
And it was all fresh in their heads. And they went through this list of about 60 people. Well, I know this guy really well. And I know. And by the end of that, had their list.
Hugely productive. Yeah.
And it was massively productive. Mm-hmm. And they went away, I think, confident.
Mm-hmm.
That they could now pick up the phone or send an email or make an introduction, whatever it might be, and start that process. Because as Amy says, you've then got to have the patience to be able to take it through the various stages.
Yeah, Chris, thank you. Thank you. Thank you both. Well, I'll let you escape back to the motorways, but brilliant to join together here in Leamington Spa, Royal Leamington Spa.
Royal Leamington Spa. Royal.
To discuss our favourite subject of major donors. And we look forward to all our listeners joining us again, hopefully for the next podcast. On Gifted Talks Fundraising. Thank you, Amy. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for pulling up a chair and joining our conversation today. Please share any comments or even pose some questions for future episodes by emailing us at inquiries@giftedphilanthropy.com.